But anyway,
I don't know why it's off.
Talk Radio.
Okay, this should be going on, and it's not, and I don't like that. Okay, we'll do this one.
Let's get lost in a better place. Pick up the boat, travel through time and space. So much to learn, so much to see. A chance to escape reality. Open your mind and your heart. Gain new knowledge for a fresh new start. They never will bring you there. So let's talk about it. Well, I and on the air.
That was created by Rachel and Michael of Trinity Entertainment, house.entertainment.inc, just for MJ Network. And MJ Network is so live on the air. And MJ stands for Marsha Joyce, which was my sister, who got me started in all of this. And we are live with the author of Preordained, Dave Wallace. And for those of you that like paranormal and different kinds of books, you're going to love this. As a matter of fact, David, I am so glad you're here because there are 10 people that have already asked me to read your book, and I told them to go on Amazon to get it. Seriously. So,
oh,
good morning.
I appreciate it.
And I'm so glad. Yeah, there's someone in one of the waitresses in my diner said, if I don't bring it today, I can't come for lunch. Seriously. and they make things to order. So I have the definition of preordained, especially of a power thought to be greater than ordinary people to decide or fix what will happen in a way that cannot be changed or controlled. So would you define it that way according to the book, or would you define it in a different way?
Well, I mean, so as far as the definition,
mm-hmm.
in terms of the book, what it means is something that is predestined to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I envisioned this story and it started, when I started putting together the outline and things like that, because initially mm-hmm. it was just this idea of this supernatural type mystery thriller set mm-hmm. in an area of South Carolina that I grew up in. I mean, I'm a native of New York, native New Yorker, born in Brooklyn. My family moved to the South, and everything was so different. Religion and supernatural things, there was a bunch of ghost stories and everything. So when I finally decided later in life to follow my passion and write, I started thinking up this supernatural mystery thriller with this cop trying to solve these crimes, and I wanted some of the aspects of some of the things that I that were, I guess, revealed to me in the Deep South, and then I thought about the Bible and tying it into the Bible, so in my mind I had this supernatural mystery thriller set in a city called Merlinsville, South Carolina, you know, about this cop who's trying to solve this serial murder case that has these biblical undertones. And then I sort of tied it to the book of Revelation, and there's a lot of what I would term preordained type events that the prophets in the olden days in the Bible, they sort of reference these events that's supposed to happen. And this guy John, he referenced all these things that's supposed to happen in the book of Revelation. So that's my layering in of preordained, if you will, and which is actually the title of the book. And so that's how I define it as it pertains to this book.
That's what I thought. That was my other definition, but I didn't want to read all of it.
I
know the Star of David because I wear one. And so creating your villain, why did you decide to name him the Star of David? And that first chapter was scary, let me tell you. Whoa.
Well, it's funny. I didn't know where to go with that. And actually, that's one of the aspects of the book that came over time. It was because I was looking for some clues and red herrings, because it's basically, it's a mystery thriller, right? It has thriller aspects, but it's also a mystery. And so one night it was late, I was writing, I had the TV on low, and the movie Seven came on. And in the movie Seven, they were referencing the seven deadly sins. Mm-hmm. And then I started thinking about my references inside of Preordained, and I said, you know, this, it would fit naturally if I use the Star of David, because you know, when you, I don't know how much I should reveal on this call, but with it being tied to the Book of Revelation, being tied to this, to the 12 tribes of Israel, and the number 12 had the significance and everything else. And so one day I was sitting there and I was looking, and I wanted to have, when I initially laid the book out, I had like multiple chapters or multiple major scenes within one chapter, and I was looking for a chapter divider. And I used the Star of David, and I started looking at it. I said, wait a minute, there's sort of 12 different points here. And I said, well, it would be good. So, and then out of that, this name came up for this killer. So it sort of just came up. Yeah, it just sort of came to me that that would be a good name for him. So.
Well, for those of you people that didn't read this, I just put it on my Facebook wall, because I don't do a chat room, because there are a lot of unusual people in the world that I want to deal with. So I get questions on my Facebook wall, or I get them afterwards. And
right.
This is so scary. As I'm reading this, and this poor person that he decides to destroy in this particular chapter is enough to give you chills. So why did he kill these people? What was his reasoning? What was this killer's rationale behind what he's doing? Because he's crazy.
He is crazy. So in the killer's mind, his father preordained the abductions and murder, and they are his way of fulfilling his father's prophecy. And that's how the supernatural elements in the story come into play.
Well, I have to tell you, I got this book, and I have to tell you, Cheryl doesn't ask me anymore. She just sends them. And then she says, somebody asked for an interview on your show. I go, what? What if I don't want to do it? They don't care. So I wanted to do it anyway, but they just send them.
Right.
I don't even have to answer. I don't answer the emails anymore, whether I'm going to read the book or not. I know it's going to come eventually. And
right.
This one I sat down and just read. Now, you have to understand, I'm a speed reader, and I read every word. And my mother made me read 10 books a week and take notes, so I still do that. You should see what's left of your book here with all my,
wow,
you know, folding-ins and every, oh, my God. So this was really scary, and I couldn't put it down, which is really good in that sense. So tell Art Summers, I like this guy, but all of a sudden he's standing at a game and has a vision. What is he thinking, and what happened to him? That scared me, too. I said, oh, my God, in the middle of nowhere, he's doing this. What does he see? And how come?
So, you know, Art is an interesting character. I did a lot of research for this book. I mean, it doesn't – I did a lot of research, but I only included key aspects as it laid to the story. But so – I did a lot of research about, like, there were a ton of plantations right in that area. Actually, a part of my family, because my mother is from that area, she grew up in this city called Georgetown County, South Carolina. So historically, my mother's part of my family was actually, they actually all grew up in that area. Some of them worked on that plantation, et cetera. And, you know, coming from New York, a lot of that stuff was foreign to me, so I would listen to a lot of the stories that people would talk about. And one of my uncles was a cop down there in a place called Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. when I was a little boy growing up, and there were a lot of different stories and people talking about visions and all this other types of stuff. And as I said, that's sort of what motivated me to write this story, because it's a departure from my previous thriller that I wrote. But for Art, what he started seeing, you know, it, as it relates to something, started reaching out to him from the beyond. And he started having a vision of this light-skinned black woman in a slave hut on one of these plantations. And this white demon rises out of the earth and overshadows her. He starts having this vision, and there was some type of message in it, and he didn't know what it was, and he's a guy. In his background, his parents, as a young child, his mother and father, along with his sister, they were murdered before his eyes by these home invaders, and he escaped. So he's a guy. As a man, he never really believed in God, because he didn't think that a God would have allowed the murder of his family. And he wound up joining the Navy SEALs, spent some time in the military, and then he became a detective, or initially a cop and then promoted to a detective in this city called Georgetown County, South Carolina. And all of a sudden, here's this guy living this normal life. He starts having these paranormal-type visions, you know, visions that basically, you know, this vision had him, it compelled him to question his own sanity, really. And so, like I said, it just came on him all of a sudden. And it basically, he started to call into question his own religious and superstitious type beliefs that he had held for most of his life.
Well, he's in law enforcement, and then his girlfriend is in law enforcement. So how does this relate to their relationship, and how does it make it strained? Because that's hard, and they are from two different planets at times.
Right. So Angela is Art's detective partner, and she's also his girlfriend. So she's a local woman who grew up in a family that believes in the paranormal, and she helps Art to understand the supernatural things that start to happen to him and his family. And so early in the story, they get engaged and they plan to move in together. And both of them, they are flawed characters. I think you might have mentioned it earlier. So Art grew up without his mother, and he's never truly trusted women after his relationship with his ex-wife failed. And in this first story of in the preordained series, I sort of reveal the beginning of Art's relationship arc, if you will, by showing he does a lousy job of picking his girlfriends. And true to form, soon after he proposes to Angela, he discovers she's hooked on pain meds, and this puts a strain on their relationship, you know, sort of along three dimensions, right? She's a covert junkie, and didn't reveal that fact to him. She's a cop, and she's basically breaking the law. They're both cops. He's seeking primary custody of his son Ben, and the fact that his fiance is hooked on prescription meds wouldn't go over too well in court for him. So that puts a strain on their relationship.
Well, tell us about Ben. He's interesting too. I'm not going to say how interesting, because when I read part of the book, I go like, oh, my God.
Yeah,
oh, wow.
I know.
I was like, I go like, oh, my God, you got to be kidding me. And I go like, oh, well, there's going to be more. So tell us about Ben. And he's very close to his grandmother, Sarah. How come? And Art's not too thrilled about that either. She's not thrilled about a lot of things.
Yeah, so Ben is 12 years old, and he also has a special relationship with his father as well, to the point
mm-hmm.
where Ben wants to live with his father. So Ben's mother, Judith, and Art, they're in this custody battle, basically. And Art coaches Ben's Little League baseball team, and Ben is a star baseball player with the expectation that he'll one day play in the major leagues. And at the start of this first book in the series, Ben has started to grow some peach fuzz on his face, and he's just started to ask his father questions about picking the right girlfriend and things like that. So he's a kid, this normal 12-year-old. I mean, I have a couple of sons, so I had a nice reference point to work from. And there's some mysteries in Art's entire family that I reveal over time in this story, not only in this book, but in the following book. I'm actually working on the outline for it right now to sort of flush out Ben as he gets older, grows into high school and doing some other things. But Ben, he's a normal kid. He has a girlfriend. He is very close to his grandmother, but there's always been questions about Art, Ben, his entire family that I sort of begin to reveal in this book, and I don't want to give away too much.
No,
because,
don't give away, though, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But he's just a normal kid that gets caught up in this big case that his father's working on, and in the end, I needed a few twists and some other things because I love twists and stories and reveals, and I
mm-hmm.
needed to work in a natural way. And as I was writing, Art's son became one of the major twists in the story as I moved towards the end of it because I wanted a compelling conclusion to the first book.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. So that's, the sort of lead into the second. So Ben's key.
The second book? Wait till they read the ending. They're going to go, oh, my God, is that really going to happen? Oh, my God, no. And, oh, my God, you don't know. I read the last part. I go, like, holy goodness. I just read it over before the show. I was like, oh, my God, this is too good to be true. Oh, wow. So... we have.
I'm glad you
like that. And I was like, it scared. I said, oh my God, I got the chills. I said, oh no, this can't be really for real. And then I said, that wouldn't really happen. And I go, well, in real life, you never know what's going to happen. And Art is a little off the wall. And I like Ben. So.
Right. Okay.
That's all I'll say about that. So he's hired to be part of the security. I have my review in front of me, which I posted before. And I read some of the reviews on Amazon. And I'm going to go, like, are these people for real? I mean, where were they when they were reading the book? They had no idea what the book was about, first of all. And their reviews make absolutely no sense, so don't worry about that. I'll post mine later with 17 stars, so not to worry about that. And I read what Ford reviews pretty much liked it, but no one's going to write something like me. That's okay. We'll fix this.
Right.
Oh, yeah, my reviews are original.
No one
even comes close, they said. So hired to be part of the security team for Corey DeMetto, who's speaking to students at his little college. Well, did you know that someone close to the billionaire, Sam, would shoot him in the head? Why? So who is Sam Amina Peters? And we won't say too much about him, but...
Right.
But Art got some solid. So what happens? That's so scary.
So Samuel Peters, he's another complex character in the story.
Oh, yeah.
Even his music choices sits at opposite ends of a wide spectrum. So he likes both heavy metal and gangster rap. And Samuel grew up as a close friend of a local orphan named Corey DeMetto, who became a technology billionaire owner of this large company in that area. and his parents helped to raise Corey. So when Corey became this billionaire, he broke off ties with the Peters family. And concerning the events at the Coastal Carolina College, so Corey requested the police to assist his bodyguards with the security detail for his planned speaking event that day. So Corey's one of the, you know, it's his alma mater. He's a big funder of that college and local schools and everything else, provides computers to all the schools and this type of thing. And so, and he specifically requested Art and Angela for this security detail. And at the conclusion of this speaking event, Samuel shot Corey in the head. And then Art shot, killed Samuel. And so this, and what we find, or what the readers will find as they're going through the story, is this event, along with Peters and Corey, they tied into what these killers were doing with these 12-year-old boys. And so Samuel, like when they go to try to discover things about Samuel, they discover things in their home that sort of gives them another clue to help them to uncover who the serial killer was that was operating in their midst down there.
Now this is scary, yeah. And it took a while before I figured this out. And I won't tell anybody if I did. And I just spelled
right.
the word wrong, which is not good. Okay, good, that's better. I'm putting comments on my Facebook wall that people are reading. Okay, so this started some very odd events that happened next. So what did Corey do, he's scary, to shock the doctors and Art? Why does he include both the doctor and Art to see his work and learn about his research? What's he trying to do? What's his goal?
So in this first book in this series, there's a scientific component of the story that I introduced that's going to become a major component of the next story, of book two. So, and the goal was to layer it in. So Corey's this guy, and he comes up with this invention that's supposed to work with your neurological system and different aspects of your body to help you with trauma, with a lot of psychological issues. It can help people with Parkinson's, all these different things. He basically comes up, or his company does, it comes up with this sort of a gene map of what all the good cells in your body are supposed to look like. And if you come up with, and if there's some disease dealing with your nervous system or various body parts or even inside of your mind, if things start happening to you, they have a way of going back and looking at this map and sort of reconstituting or regenerating different parts of your body. So that's sort of, and that's when Corey gets shot, as Art's trying to uncover, you know, why Samuel Peters shot this guy, that's when he starts to uncover and learn about this invention that Corey came up with.
I really wish it was a real invention, let me tell you. That would be really helpful.
I know. Yeah, so that was an interesting thing when I sort of dreamed that up and then trying to flush it out, and I didn't want it to take over the serial murder case that's going on, and I knew, because if I had written this first book in the way that I envisioned it all, it probably would have been 700 pages. So I realized early on I was dealing with about maybe two or three books just to get through all of the different parts of the story that I introduced in this first part of the book. But what I can tell you is that invention takes on a major role in book two, and it also relates to different aspects of what of my interpretation of what I read when I read the book of Revelation in the Bible.
Well, my book review is unique, but I'm finding that I didn't make it 10,000 words. Don't get nervous, people. I'm finding that a lot of people don't understand the history or the logic behind the Star of David or the hexagram or anything. So within the review, I just put a little explanation so that people understand it. And I put it out this morning at 5 o'clock when I got up. I said, you know what, if I don't do it now, I'm not going to get it done because I have an appointment after this. And I'm saying, oh, my God. Then I explained the tribes of Israel because people don't understand the history behind anything. So
right.
It should be interesting. And people have been reading it and saying they like my review. So I must have done a good job. And
oh, okay.
I have to tell you, and I put it on Facebook before. It's on Facebook now. I'm going to put it on a whole bunch of sites. I put it on LinkedIn. I put it on Twitter. And I belong to everything. On Facebook, like a million times, so, and people read what I write. I have no idea. They just do. And when I write a review on Amazon, they're getting very picky and take some time to approve it. And if it goes on there, fine. Otherwise, I have 20 other sites, and I don't sit and worry about what Amazon thinks anymore. But
right. When
I read the reviews yesterday, when I went, because I posted your buy link on my Facebook wall, and I'm saying, how could they even... The people that wrote the reviews, I would just discount them because, to be honest, I don't think they read the book right. Because
well, you know,
how did they give you 1 and 2 stars? Where would they think? Yeah.
Well, it's interesting because and I read every review that's put out there. So, but
yeah.
What's interesting is on Barnes and Noble, the readers on Barnes and Noble, they get it. So there's a different flavor of reviews that's out
there
on Barnes and Noble. And then on Goodreads, there's sort of a mixture of the two out there on Goodreads. Well, the good news, I mean, I just released it, and I've got about 25 or something total reviews right now, which is pretty good for a start. I mean, and because, you know, I'm diabetic, I deal with a lot of things, maintaining a job, trying to write. And the one aspect of all of this if hindsight, you know, they say is 20/20, and in my case, I wish I had studied more about marketing prior to launching this stuff, to sort of put things out there with the expectation that is coming and all the other good things that professional authors do to get their work out there, because I put a lot of time and research and everything else into this book, and there's certain parts of it, like for example, the tie, the arts heritage tie to overseas, etc., and what these British doctors uncovered, etc. That's actually true. I mean, that's actually true. Yeah, as I was researching and learning myself about different aspects of what I was writing about, I uncovered that these people actually did this stuff, and I wound up reaching out to these folks and calling them. And then I found some of the people that were related to it with blood going back centuries, and some of those folks actually live in New York. It was interesting. It was interesting to uncover that stuff. So there's a lot there. And then I'm going to go back into that a little bit in the second book as well. So I actually enjoyed this thing. But anyway, back
to... Well, you know what? Partners in Crime, I'm the first person that posted a review today. I'm number one. I can't believe it. And they have it enlisted. You've got a lot of people that are going to do reviews of your book. The one thing that's positive about Partners in Crime is no one's allowed to post anything negative. So if they have a negative review you're allowed to say to them, could you please get rid of it or wait till the blog tour is over. That's first. That's the one thing that I love about Cheryl. And they will get you a whole lot of reviews. Some people, you know, will post it on Amazon. Some will do spotlights or whatever. But basically, she reads everything. And then they'll send you the link. They'll send you the link. And you can comment one way or the other. There are a lot of sites. You know, I know I work with New York Times authors. Most of the authors that I review are part of the PhilaFest that I'm invited to, like Daniel Palmer, Vincent Zandri, everybody, Tess Gerrington, everyone. They all know this person. And
wow.
They all do their own publicity. So, and when you go on Facebook or you go on LinkedIn, and there's a site called Referral Key, Alignable, Library Thing, any one of those things, and you keep posting it into as many sites as you can, you'd be surprised how many people read everything that you write. You can post it on Google. Seriously, that's one of the best. So we've got, how come art brings in the pastor, and what role does he play in this? He was interesting, too.
Yeah, the pastor Charles Mourning. I liked him. I enjoyed writing his character. So
I like him too.
Right. So he actually helped Art with one of the clues in understanding why they were selecting the boys they were selecting, and how things were tied to the name. And this pastor, he has a lot of knowledge. He believes. And this pastor believes that God has selected him to help to identify who the major Antichrist is that's referenced in the book of Revelation. But then as clues, as these clues get revealed in Art's mind, if you will, a mind that, you know, which he's questioning his own sanity, he begins to believe that the pastor who he thought was an ally is actually the killer. So then all of a sudden he's after the pastor, because when Art discovers that this killer was actually targeting his family all along, you know, and it potentially tied back to the murder of his parents and sister long ago. So, it enrages him. You know, he's hell bent on trying to figure out who's killing people and why. And the pastor gives him this clue. But then, and as you can see, as the story unfolds, they sort of become close to each other a little bit, and Art actually reaches out to him, and he becomes a mentor for Art, if you will, because, and as I stated earlier, Art never really believed that the God, the devil, or anything existed. And then these visions starts descending on him. He gets this. He has what he thinks is a crazy vision. He's when Corey gets shot in the head and he's in the hospital and you know, he's in there trying to communicate with him, and he has this vision, and then he has another vision. He gets very sleepy, almost like a Ichabod. He falls into almost a Ichabod Crane type sleep in the stall in this bathroom, and he has this vision that in which he thinks this angel is telling him that God has selected him to sort of pick up the mantle and battle evil, this type of thing. So he's really freaking out in the middle of the story as the story's moving along, and after he goes against his captain's wishes, because Pastor Charles Mourning, he's a big-time leader in the community, a community steeped in religious beliefs, and he arrests this guy, goes against his captain's wishes, arrests, finds out the guy passes the lie detector test and everything else, and then Art sort of, you know, he goes to him. He's confused at that point in the book. He's worried. The killer's targeting his family. He's worried about his grandmother. He's worried about his son. He had lost everybody else in his family. They were all he had left. And he reaches out to the pastor and sort of sits at his feet, if you will, to try to get some understanding about the Bible and everything else. And he sort of gives Art some key pieces of insight that helps him eventually uncover what's happening around him.
That was scary, let me tell you. So,
yeah.
Why is Flannery? I don't like this guy. Art's just trying to do his job, and how come he keeps blocking him from doing it? What is his problem with him? Because he's a good detective, but he's not letting him do his job. Every step of the way, he's like on top of him.
Well, I mean, Art was doing his job, and then Flannery's boss, so the mayor told Flannery. So initially, this serial killer, he's operating within the confines of Georgetown County, and then all of a sudden, and he's abducting these 12-year-olds from various cities, and then all of a sudden he starts concentrating his recent activity within the city of Merle's Inlet. And Art is a detective in that city, and but the captain is told by the mayor to let the FBI, well, the FBI has requested that they take over all aspects of the case. Art wanted to work with them. You know, the FBI, they were sort of territorial. So in one aspect, the captain was being forced, his hand was being forced by leadership to remove Art from the case. But on the other spectrum of it, and what more will come out in this, like in book two, the captain has his own political aspirations, and he's also a member of Charles Morning's church. So when Art wanted to go after this pastor, the captain said, "No way! You need more than just someone who says that they were an eyewitness who saw this man do something, a guy who's a pillar in the community." So the captain was thinking about larger issues than what Art was thinking about. And so in his mind, he was trying to solve the serial case as well as protect the pastor from Art, because knowing Art, he figured Art would hurt this guy. So it was his way of trying to protect his community, there's more. Like I said, this book, it is a series. The same way that, in the same way, like when you, I don't know if you saw the Godfather trilogy, if you will. In the first book, a lot of things happen, and then in the second book, in that trilogy, you start learning more about the background and things that are going on. As I'm writing the outline for book two, more of that stuff gets introduced because the same characters are coming back. So Angela's coming back, Charles Morning, and all these other people. Yeah, they're all coming back. Some have different roles, some don't. You saw from the ending, I left it as a cliffhanger. So Art, there's a lot of things that's going to be dealt with. Ben is going to be a little older, and relationships, and he has this giant inheritance and everything. So there's a lot coming. A lot more is going to be revealed about the captain and everybody else in the story.
Well, there's a lot of moral issues that he has to face also, Art, at the end of the story. He has to make a major decision, and that major decision is I'm not going to tell, which is really scary. And if everybody reads one of the last few pages in the book, you're going to get to hear the voice of the person that did all of this, and you're going to believe, oh, my God, really?
I read that in
bold letters, and I'm going, oh, I thought there was something odd about this guy, blah, 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 but you know what? Whoa. So what happens to the pastor that changes it all? And Ben gets kidnapped, and who sees it? But they won't step forward to say anything. That's scary, too.
Right. So Ben, like I said, he's growing peach fuzz, and he develops a relationship with a young girl in school the same age, and there's a serial killings happening. You know, 12-year-old boys are being abducted. Art tells his son, look, stay with your grandmother. Don't go off. Don't be out and about. Art believes the killer's going to strike in his area. And then he falls for this girl. He wants to spend time with her. So he's sneaking off. Typical young boy, you know, likes this girl. Parents are telling him one thing. He's going to go follow his heart and pursue this girl. So he's out walking with her, spending time with her. And she sees the abduction of Ben. His little girlfriend, Kayla, she witnesses it. Her father, one of these special forces guys in the military, you know, he knows how to get lost if he needs to. So they have no way of finding this little girl, and they didn't understand why. Art couldn't understand the girl. Ben was sneaking off to go see her. Obviously, they care for her. So why wouldn't she come forward? Why wouldn't she come forward and help ID who this kidnapper was? Because Art had seen it from a distance and had tried to chase him down, couldn't catch them. His son's in the clutches of a killer who normally kills the boys within 2 to 2.5 days of getting his hands on them. So he's desperate. And what they uncover is that when the father finally does, bring her in, what they uncover is that this this girl believes that she saw the pastor kidnap Ben. And the pastor's big in the community. The father, he, being a military guy, ex-special forces guy, he understands this type of thing, that witness testimony isn't always accurate. And so, but they had to bring her in. So eventually they brought her in, and that's when she said, hey, she believed that the pastor was the kidnapper. They go to his church. And that's what led Art down the path of going after the pastor, yeah.
Well, before I forget, you can't get rid of me yet, people. On Thursday, the author of Burn One Down, and we're going to talk about what happens when they want to burn a marijuana dispensary. And that's a very interesting topic. On the 4th, I've got a panel show, and we're going to talk about exactly what we're talking about right now. Absolutely open-ended endings. And for that, we have New York Times author Rick Belsky, yesterday's news. We've got Charles Salzberg, Second Story Man. We've got Bruce Coffin and Beneath the Shadows. And we've got Alan Topol and the Russian Resurgence. And who knows, we might have some other people that might, who knows, come along too. On the 6th, we have the author of Dangerous Places. And on the 7th, we have New York Times author Philip Donnelly, Speed the Dawn. On the 13th, the former head of the CDC with the book Evil Wins, Michael Shusko. And we're going to talk about Darfur in Africa and the refugees. And to end June, what better than the one and only Tess Gerritsen? And it's not a book. It's a movie called Island Zero. It's a horror, and I have to watch it. And I told my husband he has to watch it with me because it's going to be scary. It's very scary. And that is going to be it till August 1st with the author of Hiding. I'm taking off the month of July. I don't do any shows in July. It's just my time to be at the Thriller Fest in July from the 13th to the 15th. Anybody that's going to be there, I'm going to be there. I'm the only media person that was invited. So before we end, remember, people, Father's Day is coming, and Preordained is a good book to get for Father's Day. And Stephen Manchester's book, Three Shoe Boxes, make sure you have tissues for that one. It's really very, very good. Hiding, Evil Wins, Barbara Dugoni's book is coming out. I just read it. It's due June 26th, A Steep Price. I get everything, so you never know. So how does Art finally realize what's happening? and the shocking ending is like unbelievable. How did you create the ending of the book without telling anybody what the ending is?
Right. What I love is major twists. And I wanted a complex twist at the end of the story. So when his visions are finally revealed, or the source of these visions are finally revealed, when he uncovers this stuff about his ancestry, and he winds up. So there's a place in the book. There's an actual place in Georgetown County is called Brook Green Gardens. And on the grounds of Brook Green Gardens, there are these there's a plantation. I think it's called the Oak Plantation. It was owned by a former governor in South Carolina. And you can actually go on these tours right now at that place. And there's these cabins. There's all this stuff that takes you back in time. And so when Art finds clues out there that leads him to the killer, and as I was sitting there and working out the ending of the story and thinking about major twists, et cetera, that's when, so it sort of just came as inspiration that this is the way this book in the series needs to end. So I didn't plan it. It's almost like the forces in the story led me to that conclusion. Yeah.
Well, Art, at the end, finds out something that he doesn't want to know about Ben, but we're not going to say what it is. And
right.
He has realizes that he has to save him. So when you learn the 12 boys that are killed and you learn their relationship to the 12 tribes of Israel, which as I looked up, I said, okay, this is really good. So it's filled with biblical references. That's probably what's going to keep, you know, besides the twists and everything, that, and we don't really know who this person is that he sees in his mind and what he learns from someone about the truth, about everything, about his own self, will shock the daylights out of everybody. So.
Right.
If I could speak to everyone right now, what would he say about his life? And is he going to continue with Angela? Is he going to, you know, help her get over her addiction to medicine? Because I did a show on opiates, and let me tell you, they're powerful. And I'm glad the government may be cracking down on. They're going to be cracking down in 2019. I read an article on they're not going to be able to get long-term prescriptions. In order to get it maybe for a week, 2 weeks, the month, the most, but you're not going to be able to have it like refilling, you know, refilling
right,
them all the
right.
time.
Right. It was definitely an interesting choice for me to use opiate addiction for a cop as her flaw in the story, if you will. And because I was looking for something real, something that I thought was timely. It was tough to write about it and to read about it because it's a life I don't know. I wound up making a lot of meeting a lot of people that are dealing with this addiction and the challenges that they face, etc. And so she's definitely a part of book two. Art as a man, like I said, he's going through his initial part of his relationship arc, if you will. So I'm not going to reveal exactly how book two unfolds, but she plays a key role. She's back. Most of the cast of characters are back. But I do deal with addiction. Art. He's definitely going to grow more from a relationship perspective. Even though he's 30, I intentionally, because I wanted him to go through this relationship cycle, if you will, because it's something that most of us go through. Some go through it earlier in life than others. Some people never get it. So I said, okay, I want to go through this journey. Art's going to go through this journey, he and Angela. And as far as whether or not the two of them are going to work out, I don't want to say. I mean, what can I say about Art other than if he could speak to everybody? He's just going through. He's going through a lot. He watched some crazy things happen to his grandmother, which freaked him out. Totally freaked him out from a paranormal perspective. And I think the way I ended it, the first book, the pastor has said that he would try to help Art's grandmother. They become friends, and they're going to try to move forward and figure out how to, save the world and everybody else from this big, bad Antichrist character that I'm going to bring out more in book two, sort of continue the story.
Oh, so I take it he's not done yet. This person's not
done
yet.
Nothing's done yet. Like I said, this thing could have easy.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, there's more, plenty more coming, yeah. But I enjoyed this this format of this. I'm glad that Cheryl, because Cheryl told me, she said, do this. And I'm like, well, you know, Cheryl, I'm sort of a private person, right? I mean, I live out near a wildlife reserve. She said, you're going to be on this thing that's going to get broadcast. And I said, really? And she said, yeah, I highly recommend this thing to you. And I'm like, okay. And
I know, you're skeptical, I know.
Yeah, because that's just not what I do. I mean, I'm a computer technology guy by profession. That's what I've done for like 27 years.
My husband too, yeah. Him too.
Yeah. Yes, I'm normally tinkering with things, and I don't work in sales or anything like that, so I don't have a lot of interaction, especially with tons of people. So this was an interesting challenge with me, because when she recommended, she said, David, you have to do this. She said, friend, she'll give you a way to communicate with people, let them know about the story. So eventually, it took me about a week to muster up everything I needed inside, because it was a departure from my normal self, get on here and talk and do that type of thing. But it actually was great. I enjoyed this.
I'm glad, because this is supposed to be fun. I know she does this all the time. She does not give the authors a choice. She doesn't give me a choice either. She'll just say, we have a request. I go, wait a minute, I have to find a spot for the request. And she knows that, you know, your spot was filled. And then she said to me, can I do another one this week? And I go, like, wait a minute, we're going to put it. And next week, I don't normally do three, but I have one for the 4th, the 6th, and then I couldn't resist Speed the Dawn. I couldn't resist that. And on the 13th, Evil Winds, everybody needs to listen to that show, because it's going to be about the refugees in Darfur, and it's a true story. And he's, you know, from his personal experience, Michael Susko is going to tell it. And then, of course, to scare the daylights out of me, you know, Island Zero. So before we end, where can everybody find out about you and your work? And when do you predict the next one? Because I got to read it. Now that I read this one, I've got to get the next one, seriously.
I'm going to give myself a year to really nail it. I want to put in a lot of work. I mean, I have to rise above book one. So I'm giving myself sometime next year, right around this time frame, I plan to release the next one.
What's it? Do you have a title?
No, I mean, it's boring now, Preordained 2. I mean, I know it's in...
No, you don't want to do that.
I know. Like I said, right now I'm in just the stages of outlining it. And but I'll come up with something. I'll do that. One person told me, I was talking with somebody about it. They said, because I have a little following, so people have started sending me like emails going out to my website and reaching out to me through my contact form and stuff like that. So one of the things somebody suggested, said, well, why don't you ask your readers? Because someone else had
asked.
Yeah,
you could. They do. They do. They do.
Yeah, so who knows? I may even do that. I mean, that might even be a way to get them engaged in what I'm going through and how I'm developing the story. So I've been sort of thinking about some more ways for me to reach out to other people as well, because as I said, I mean, I have close family, close friends, and never done a lot of public speaking, reaching out to a bunch of people and this type of thing. So I'm learning and growing as I move along this path. And what I may do, as I said, is for all the people who have signed up to my email, let's just throw the question out there. Maybe they may give me a title that I could use. I don't know. We'll see.
You never know. But also, Cheryl's going to have a lot of people that I know are going to read it. And if she feels that, or you feel that you need more reviews, tell her to let me know, because everybody that I have a lot of people that will review your book because I said so. And because if I say the book is good, then they're going to like it. People read whatever I write. Yeah, and I have a review site on Facebook called Only Reviews. So if anybody wants to request a review, you can request them from the reviewers, or you email me or private message me, and then I could send a PDF, or I could send the information to Cheryl, and she can, you know, figure out how to get the review to these people that I know are good reviewers, that are credible. I don't just let anybody review books. I'm very careful. And they reviewed mine, all of mine. And, yeah, so I'm hoping that everybody will read A Daughter's Promise, which is my last book. And it's my promise never to put my mom in a nursing home. And it's a true story told in her words and mine, what we went through for 11 years before. And my doctor told me to shut off the, you know, life support. I said, I'll shut it off when, never. I said, when God wants her, that's when she's going to go, not before.
It's something you wrote.
I wrote it, yeah. I wrote it.
Oh.
And A Daughter's Promise by Fran Lewis, and I cried when I wrote it. And then the last one that came out last month is called, it's a caregiver's guide. It's for people who are dealing with Alzheimer's, elder care abuse, and traumatic brain injury. And that's a caregiver's guide to help with resources to help people to understand it. And when it comes to Alzheimer's, there's very little that I don't know. And I work really hard with a lot of agencies, and it's hard to get the right people, but I was lucky with Partners in Care. I don't know how they are now, but back then I had 6 people that were part of my family that we treated like family. And every holiday, every event, they were all 6 were invited. Mother's Day, Father's Day, any Christmas, Easter, Mother's Day, gift cards to every one of them, because without them, I couldn't have kept my mom alive. And 3 of them stay in touch with me and let me know I'm still wonderful. They love me. So it's great.
So I want to thank
you so much. And I do panel shows ever so often, and I might tag you to do one with some people because, you know, you're writing a book with an unopened ending, and you're bringing characters back, and characters in a series are something that we talk about. And in your case, we might talk about how you started the story to scare everybody like me,
right?
Which is really great. So, everybody, thank you so very much. The sun is shining. It's 100 degrees outside. Actually, it's in New York. It is now 78 degrees where I am. And this girl was born and bred in the South Bronx, and I grew up there. My dad grew up in Brooklyn. So when you said Brooklyn, that was, he grew up on Mulberry Street in Brooklyn. And so New York, born and bred, people. So everybody, have a great day. Have a wonderful day. Have a positive day. And please get yourself 1 million copies of Preordained by David Wallace. And bye.